All right, guys, we are back. Sources from the Sofa, full lineup today. Jason Zinke, Aaron Toler, and myself, Roman Valdez. It was a hell of a football week. We're going to talk college football today, some NFL, the wild card wrapped up, beginning of the NL and ALCS getting underway. Pretty exciting baseball. And we're hitting like the equinox of sports. There's even some WNBA finals going on. Hockey just started, you know. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And then basketball season starts in a week or so. I don't even know what I'm going to do with myself with all the sports on TV. I know Aaron's already got his like lazy boy already set up with his ass imprinted on those seats.
Been imprinted for a while, man.
They've been imprinted for a while, yeah. With the dog imprint as well. Cool, man. Let's get underway then. So we're recording a day later than we usually do. We typically do this on a Monday night after Monday Night Football. Some delays, but here we are Tuesday after a pretty fun, I think it was a pretty fun Yankee game.
Interesting enough, we didn't record yesterday after the Dodgers lost, but I don't know if that's a coincidence or anything.
It's not a coincidence, but it didn't help me as I had a couple shots to kind of understand what the hell happened. I totally forgot it was a 1 o'clock game.
I think the game was over before Rome even knew it was on.
Yeah, I mean, they were down 6-0 when he found out it was on.
Yeah.
I was on Twitter tweeting some stuff, talking shit on, you know, on our podcast. If you guys are not following us on X, we're killing it on there. And then I find out, what the hell? It's a grand slam. I thought we're talking about Dodgers, like a little highlight. No, it's the Mets. I'm like, what? It's only 1:30. Turn on the TV. Yep, it's on the TV. I don't know. Hey, I'm not a good fan.
Yeah, very weird broadcasting schedule, I would say, for the NLCS. I mean, just overall, you put a West Coast home game on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday. I know it was a holiday in some parts of the country with formerly Columbus Day, but I think it's Indigenous People Day now.
Yeah.
But still, I don't think that's a day most people have off in LA. And just from a, you know, an overall viewing experience, little East Coast bias, I think, there, that we make sure we get the Mets on at 4 p.m, parlaying straight to the Yankees on at like 7:30, 8 o'clock or whatever it was. So the East Coast got, you know, both games in prior, but you have, you know, most of, I think, California going to work while the Dodgers play at 1 o'clock. An interesting broadcast schedule, I will say.
Yeah, only government jobs had the day off, but I was hungover, so I wasn't prepared to catch game at 1 o'clock, and yeah, it just happened to work out like that. Then Aces, man, it was a New York day in heaven. You have the Mets, you have the Yankees, they have the Rangers on one TV. I think they were playing my Red Wings. You had the Islanders on another TV, and then you had two of the three NFL teams, Bills against the Jets, which we can get started there, I guess. It was just New York Day. It was pretty wild. You guys, I believe, had the Jets winning that game.
Jason had the Bills.
I had the Bills, man.
Nice. I was rooting for the Bills. It was a divided bar. I even ran into like a really cool couple. The wife was a Bills fan. Husband was a Jets fan. He was not happy at the end of the game once Aaron Rodgers threw that pick. Pretty solemn. Whereas, you know, half the bar, it wasn't even that many Bills fans. I don't think there's a lot of Bills fans here in San Francisco. But we have a Jets bar up the street.
I don't know if there's a farther place you can get from upstate New York than San Francisco. Maybe San Diego, but so I don't know if there's a lot of Bills fans. I mean, the Jets fans overall should have been happy. You got a gift Hail Mary at the end of the half, which was
That was wild.
Wild that ESPN, Joe Buck, and Troy Aikman had like the whole video package of all of the Hail Marys that Aaron Rodgers had thrown. It's like, oh, you know, we're at the 50-yard line and we've been around for this one, and they got the highlights playing, and then just go ahead and does it. Like, I mean, couldn't script it much better than that. Just a weird talent for a Hall of Fame quarterback, you know, future Hall of Fame quarterback. Hey, won a Super Bowl, however many time MVP, and it's just great at throwing Hail Marys. Just a random part of Stata's career. So but I think the Jets fans would have been happy in the half getting a gift 7 points, basically.
Yeah, 4 MVPs, 4 Hail Mary touchdowns. Jets definitely got a gift on that one.
That was crazy.
Yeah, it's a tough loss given everything that went on for the Jets there. But, you know, better news this morning with news breaking that Davante Adams traded to the Jets. So they got something to look forward to this weekend against your Steelers, Rome. And they've opened up as a favorite, too, on the road against Pittsburgh.
I just saw. And the Bills got a gift as well. They were active. Today felt like trading day. You know, all of a sudden we got two big trades with Amari Cooper going from the Browns. I bet you he's pretty happy now going to Josh Allen. Yeah, let's talk about the Jets a little bit. So this is the first game post Saleh firing. They also demoted Hackett. I thought the play calling was a lot better. We saw Breece Hall get a lot of carries, a lot of touches. They opened up the passing game a little bit. Rodgers, I don't know what to think about Rodgers kind of throwing his boy underneath the bus of like why that was a pick at the end, saying that he didn't run the right route. But I thought the Jets could have won, but I thought the better team won the game, rightfully so. The only thing that was kind of crazy is like so many penalties, like 11 per team for over 100 yards. Like they just kept on throwing the fucking flag. It's just like, I hate when it's like a primetime game that's just fucking filled with penalties the whole time. It kind of made it slightly unenjoyable.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that with the players at the end. I think even Rodgers even called into question one of the roughing the passer calls that was like to his benefit. That was very questionable too. But the Jets had the ball, you know, for their game. I think Zerline missed like two field goals that should have been makeable that would have given them the 3-point win if you turn those the end their way for something, you know, that in this league has been a chip shot. I know there was some very, you know, wild wins going on in the stadium during that game, but it was within the grasp for the Jets. It's still 2-4, not ideal, but you know, they do have a lot of cupcake games, I think, coming up. They got one, you know, pretty competitive game with the Steelers, but I mean, Aaron, you said they're the favorites in this game already, the Jets are?
Yeah, so the Jets are 1.5, 2-point favorite against the Steelers.
So, I mean, they get the Steelers, they get New England, they get a tough game against Houston, but then, you know, they get into it Arizona and Indianapolis down the stretch. So I think it's not over for the Jets. The Davante Adams obviously signals that they're all in. There was some, you know, like you mentioned, Rome, some different play calling from Hackett in this game, got Breece Hall involved. There's some questioning play calls here or there. Like the one thing that I didn't like, I think mostly is like they get first and goal a couple times. And the first thing they do is like Rodgers with the ball, trying to make a play doesn't work. And then second down, they're automatically going to the run that goes nowhere. And they're always all of a sudden in like a third and goal from like the 7 or 8 at that point too. So it's like you get within the 5 a lot of these times. Like, why are you trying to push the ball ahead and running? A ton of these offensive coordinators do this. It's not just a Hackett thing. I know we talked, you know, at length about the Bears versus the Colts a couple weeks ago and what they were doing from within the 5. So, but not over for the Jets. I think a lot of room for them to still take this division and be a playoff team like we talked about, given that the Dolphins struggles. But the Bills so far pacing ahead, they're able to stop their skid and, you know, maintain first and kind of their path to win the division.
Yeah, I mean, this was a big win for Buffalo, going on the road, winning divisional game, taking a 2-game lead in the division. You know, Jason mentioned Miami. Bless you, sir. Miami looks like they're in trouble. You know, talks about Tua coming back and playing again this year, but who knows when. Patriots, we know they've got a rough road ahead, but, you know, the future could look bright with Drake May. If you're the Jets, you know, two missed field goals. Yeah, there were gust of winds up to 30, 60 miles per hour.
It was gusty.
Who your meteorologist was for that game. And, you know, like Jason said, once you get inside the 5, the Jets got a good O-line. They should be able to run the ball in there, but they get too predictable. I think a lot of OCs try to outsmart themselves, go hard play action, try to sneak a tight end into the flat. Rodgers threw an incompletion. They did run one in that got called back with a, you know, like you said, Rome, questionable calls throughout the game by officiating. That was a questionable hold on Tyron Smith. I mean,
yeah, what quarter was that?
Late in the 4th.
Yeah, okay.
And that was a big penalty because that pushed them back, and then they ended up missing the field goal, you know, by a Zerline there. So, and then Mike Williams, his days are numbered. He'll be out. New York's Jets are going to trade him. I believe he'll be inactive even if he is still part of the roster come this next game. Rodgers just doesn't trust him. Williams, you know, linked possibly to Pittsburgh. Maybe they swap him right there during the game and say, here you go, Tomlin, pin him in.
So, yeah, it's a carousel of who Rodgers is going to throw underneath the bus week in and week out. By the way, was that an incomplete pass or a fumble?
Oh, on the Rodgers?
Yeah. I think we were talking about it earlier.
I would call it a fumble.
Most definitely.
But they ruled it incomplete. Even the ex-ESPN NFL rules analyst for the Bills working up there wanted him to challenge it and get that overturned to a fumble. So that tells you all you need to know. It could have went 50-50, but they called it a fumble. I think they originally called it a fumble on the field and then quickly turned it over. But it's kind of the old tuck rule. Is it a fumble? Is it a forward pass? Yeah, the hand was coming forward, but he wasn't trying to throw the ball. As you can see, he fully gripped it and then was hit and the ball came loose. In my opinion, that's a fumble, but, you know, they didn't call me for the replay.
Dude, Aaron, just go ahead and work for the NFL already. Be like an NFL officiating crew. I think you'd be really good at it.
And then just, you know, Rome, you were talking a lot of smack early in the year on Miami. You see the difference between Alan Lazard. That was a catch. The Virginia Tech game against Miami was not a catch. Go look at the two, and you'll be able to see the difference between a catch and no catch.
I think the best part of the Lazard catch, like, he didn't even catch it at the highest point. Like, literally, it was just, like, you know, full extension, but it was, like, as it was coming down and just got the ball all the way to the ground, you know, and that wasn't questionable. So, yeah, it was great catch, great throw.
Nice. So, like, we're officially a third of the way there, right?
Yes.
I think some teams, it's kind of weird. Some teams are starting to look like the way we thought they were going to look like. Some teams, we still have a lot of questions as we're going to get to the second part of the end of, you know, the season where I guess that's going to clarify itself up a little bit more. Let's talk about the biggest losses of the week. Do you guys have any ones that kind of stuck out?
I mean, the Cowboys, I think, overall was probably up there. Not just the loss itself, but just how embarrassing, you know, the team overall looked. I don't think anyone in Dallas was happy. I think anti-Cowboy America was definitely happy on this game. I think X was pretty all over the dismay that Cowboys fans were. There was a great one of, I think, a Cowboys fan that was throwing up or something at AT&T Stadium, and there was a Lions fan like doing the gritty behind them or something. So,
could you say that to me? Have you seen it again?
Yeah, I'll send it to you. So it was pretty good. I think that was probably the biggest loss. I think the other one up there, they've been kind of backtracking for the last 4 weeks was the Saints, but I think they made a real game of it in the second quarter and took the lead and just totally got, you know, had a second half to forget, and the Buccaneers just ripped it away from them too. So I think it puts the Saints down in the probably towards the bottom of the division and tracking like we thought they would, probably finishing third in that NFC South. But I don't know. Surprising losses. I think the Cowboys would be the most surprising to me only because of how bad it was, not necessarily they lost.
So for me, that's like probably like one of the worst losses of the week, but it's also one of the better wins. I loved it. I loved seeing the Lions dominate. It was great, really enjoyable. The only shitty part is they're starting to look like this Super Bowl juggernaut, and then Hutchinson goes down. You can hear it on the telecast, his breaking his leg. It made me cringe. I went to go see replays like an idiot on X, and I really feel bad, but it kind of opens the door maybe for them to go pick up what's-his-face on the Raiders if they're going to be doing a fire sale.
What are you talking about, Max Crosby?
Yeah.
I think the Raiders are going to move off Max Crosby. But, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about disappointing losses, obviously the embarrassment that we saw from Dallas was a big loss. But Jason touched on the Saints. I want to go with the Seahawks on Thursday night and the Jets on Monday night. Those are two teams that lost at home that could have basically taken control of the division leads. When you lose divisional games at home with a chance to take an early division lead in your conference, those are big losses. So those two are going to sting, I think, for the Jets and Seahawks as we move on later on into the season.
Nice. Yeah. Can't disagree with those. 49ers really need that win. So really happy that they got that win. And they have a really big matchup this week against KC. Other big wins. Bengals didn't look so good against the Giants. That was a weird game.
I think the Giants are better than we think, man. I really do.
I think the defense is solid. The offense, it kind of sputtered. It was back to the old, you know, Danny Pennies, not Danny Dimes. It's Danny Pennies now.
I thought Daniel Jones played fairly okay. I mean,
really?
he had the one turnover there inside the red zone where he was hit during the throw. But overall, I mean, Brian Daboll kind of pulled out all the stops. I think they went for like five straight fourth downs, hit three out of two. One ended up there at the end they didn't get, and then Cincinnati went down there and scored. But Cincinnati came in averaging over 35 points a game the last three times out and was held to 10 until they got that late touchdown by Brown to seal the deal. But, I mean, Cincinnati, for a team that needed a win, they got one. But the Giants, they're a little more competitive and tougher than we thought, I think.
I think their biggest miss probably in the game, like, no one's probably going to talk about it. Like, they had Tyrone Tracy in at running back for the Giants. He got 17 carries, only managed to get 50 yards. They had Devin Singletary out, and I know he's kind of a back that's went around the league and stuff, but, I mean, he's been what was supposed to be the replacement for Saquon, big shoes to fill, but he's been pretty serviceable the first couple of weeks. I think with him being out, that was, you know, sorely missed on the running game to really take some pressure off of Daniel Jones. I don't know if I go as far as Aaron to say they're better than we think because, you know, scored 7 points in the game. Daniel Jones, no touchdown, still throws a pick. Yeah, I mean, for me, I was more wondering when I actually tuned in that game Sunday night, is like, why is this game in primetime right now?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why do we have like 1-4 versus 2-3 or whatever it was going in primetime? But it's the Giants, and yes, they're going to get all the Sunday night love that they get all the time. And so, but...
I thought wasn't it like an Eli celebration too at halftime or commencing the Super Bowl champion team or something was going on too there in New York?
I missed that.
I don't know.
I totally missed that. Yeah. I thought like another big win for this week has to go to the Chargers. They came out after their bye week, completely dominated the Broncos. They looked really solid. I believe Herbert finally had over 200 passing yards. I have to look it up real quick. But they kind of took off the gas pedal or took their foot off the gas pedal in the second half, but just came out swinging and really controlled that game from top to bottom.
Did we ever get clarification what happened to Harbaugh in the game?
Irregular heartbeat.
Yeah.
Okay. But and then went back out?
Yeah, I got took an IV and took a magnesium pill and got the A-OK from the doctor. He got cleared.
Yeah,
cleared
blood thinner, too.
Sideline. Yeah, blood thinner, too, right?
Yeah. Okay. That's something we should probably monitor, man, because if he's all of a sudden having heart problems.
Well, he's had them since 1999. So he's had a few procedures. He even joked that he's 2-0 when he's had irregular heartbeats during games.
Fuck, yeah, he did say that, yeah.
I don't know. There was another thing on X that I said, a conspiracy theory on X was that he changed pants then that he came out originally so that he went number 2 in his pants and went to change and stuff, and that was the real reason behind it. Probably not the real reason, but entertaining nonetheless.
That would be something that he would do, though, probably.
I heard he basically made a phone call to Connor Stallions and was trying to seal some signs before the game started to get some inside information. And then once he got the A-OK, he returned back to the sideline.
Dude, that guy's making his money, making his rounds on the media, just blowing everyone out of the bus. Not blowing everyone underneath the bus. That's throwing everyone out of the bus. All right. God damn it. That's hilarious. With that, I do think we should update the coach's hot seat. I think now's a great time to update that. One's already gone. That was on there. And then also, I'd like to reveal my new Power 5 rankings for the NFL.
I think before you go into that, I think if you talk biggest winners of the week, I think overall, you look at, we were talking this a little off air, the NFC North the entire week. When you look at the Lions, you know, crushing the Cowboys, the Packers dismantling the Cardinals, and then my Chicago Bears dismantling the Jaguars. Between them three, the Vikings on the bye and where they're at, like, you have the entire division 4-2 or better. And then when you look at, like, point differential, like, they're, like, four of the top teams in the league from a point differential perspective, too, for, you know, for points scored versus points again. So, like, this is going to be a super competitive. If the playoffs ended today, all four NFC North teams are in the playoffs right now. They're the entire wild card. So, a lot of interdivision games to be played down the stretch because I think they've only had one so far. I think the Vikings-Packers has been the only one to play within division, but this is a stacked division that's really going to, you know, going to be interesting down the stretch as we start getting these interdivisional games because all the teams are looking very impressive.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I know a lot of us talk about this being your guys' favorite division. Both your teams are in there, obviously. It was my second favorite, but it's a good possibility that all four can get in. If you look at the NFC West, you just had the Niners, Seahawks, Cardinals, they'll probably cancel each other out. Seahawks are having some issues on defense. Maybe they're not going to be as good as we, you know, me and Aaron thought they might have like the leap this year. And then the East Commanders, I don't think they're going to regress at all. Seems like they're really competitive. Good losses. Eagles, that's a shit show. We can talk about Sirianni in a little bit. Cowboys, they're done. They're lucky to be 3-3 right now, actually. And I don't even have them making the playoffs. That was my preseason prediction. So the only thing is the NFC South, because you got the Falcons and the Bucks. They're going to be duking it out for the whole season. And who knows? Maybe the Bucks regress. Maybe the Falcons regress. Falcons look loaded. They look like they finally found their stride. And Bucks, as long as they have Mayfield, that guy, he's just a fun guy to watch. And the whole team's really fun. So who knows?
Yeah, a lot of football left to be played. And they got to play a lot against each other in the North. And the rest of these divisions, too, will shake out, too. You're going to have some, you know, teams that go 5-1 or 6-0 against their division rivals down the stretch. And it'll give, you know, someone some better win totals. But just I think this is the best. Through 6 weeks, this is the best division, I think, ever in football from a records perspective. And, you know, you have, you know, really good teams playing really good football right now. And, you know, the Vikings were the team that Aaron and I thought would be the odd man out making the playoffs this year. I think both of us were aligned on that. And they're on top of the division so far. So it's going to be exciting, you know, back half of the season. But I think big wins from both of them, because that's been, you know, really the story, at least in my neck of the world, maybe Aaron's too. So,
yeah, NFC North, man, that's where it's at right now. I think if every one of those teams can get to 10 wins, then you're looking at maybe them all getting in. Got a big weekend matchup this weekend with Minnesota versus Detroit for the divisional lead. That'll tell us a lot what's going on there. But, yeah, it's the best division in football right now, no doubt about that. Bears got a bye week before they come out of the bye, play Washington. So it's exciting times right now over in the NFC North. And the other, you know, we'll, like you said, Roman, we'll touch base on the Eagles and Sirianni and that issue going on there. But a lot of these divisions look like they're only going to get one team in. Maybe some get two in. I do like Atlanta. I do like Tampa Bay. But the other divisions, I think, are just one team and out.
Yeah, so I guess we'll just segue to coaching hot seats. Obviously, the NFC South is pretty safe unless you think Al's in danger. But man, I'm kind of worried. I'm not sure if I can narrow it down to five. We got Sirianni, the Eagles. We got Cowboys. Maybe Daboll doesn't make it either, but I don't think his seat's hot. I just think they just might make a change there. We already saw Saleh get axed. Browns. Does Stefanski make it out? Does the Bengals coach make it out? I feel like if they don't turn around, his seat's going to get really hot. And then any day now, Peterson should be axed from the job.
Yeah, like I told you, Rome, I talked to some people out there in Duval County. Peterson does not win this weekend in London. He will be axed on the flight back. He'll be fired next Monday. For sure, the Jaguars are going to move on. There's going to be 8 openings, I believe, we talked about. You mentioned all those guys. All those spots, I think, have a chance of come open. I don't see McCarthy. He's playing on a contract anyway, so he'll probably last the season unless they want to make a move to Zimmerman, but I just don't know if they're going to do that. Jerry just doesn't make firings in season. Plus, Dak Prescott and McCarthy are pretty close.
By the way, his blow-up today was not good.
No, it wasn't, but, you know, it was a legit question. I mean, Dallas didn't do anything in the offseason to improve the team, and they haven't been to a conference championship game in, like, 30 years. And they got a lot of injuries. They don't have a lot of depth. I mean, they had a chance to get, you know, Henry from Titans. They didn't do that. And, you know, they've been embarrassed going back to the playoffs last year, their last 4 home games. 0-4, annihilated in all 4 games.
On Jerry's birthday. I loved it.
On Jerry's birthday.
Oh, man, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassment of riches.
America's team on Jerry's birthday. And, I mean, Detroit embarrassed them so bad, dude. They were running trick plays with linemen out at wide receiver.
And then they tried to do, I think, both tackles, I think, were in on pass plays for touchdowns.
Talk about rubbing it in. Talk about rubbing it in. And I told you when we talked last Thursday that, hey, Detroit was going to come out mad after getting robbed by the officials last year in that game. And
yeah.
They took it personally. They took it personally.
So rank it, like, hottest seat to honorable mentions, I guess.
I think Peterson's the hottest,
right? Yeah,
he's the hottest. The one thing was circling that a lot of names in the head coaching stuff. We talked about from a free agent coaching class that'll be circling jobs. The Jaguars, I was talking to a few friends of mine about Belichick, and I think, you know, he's circling maybe the Eagles job, maybe the Giants job, because he had some ties to that organization when he was defensive coordinator for Parcells. You know, Mara's kind of an old school owners, but the Belichick notoriously wants a lot of control. The Jaguars, to me, seem like an interesting opportunity for that organization that, hey, they're going to get the cons are just going to give you, you know, full control to everything going on in Jacksonville, where the Eagles have had a pretty good structure from, you know, GM down from owner and what they've done building teams. I think it'll be very choosy on what are the teams willing to give Belichick the type of control that he's going to want, because a lot of people are saying, oh, he's going to replace McCarthy with the Cowboys, but that didn't work the greatest with Parcells, and he likes a similar structure. That's, I think it'd be even worse with Belichick, given the way he wants to control. So that, I no sources for me. This is pure speculation going around of, like, what's a job in total control that they'd give the keys over to Belichick. They already tried to do this with Urban Meyer before, to a degree. It didn't work out in Jacksonville for how bad it was. But now you got a guy, hey, where does a 70-plus-year-old guy go retire and get his last job, man? We go to Florida. So generally they go to South Beach. Well, hey, Duval County will do. And I think that's a name to look at, of what Shad Khan, Tony Khan, and people in the Jaguars, you know, would look at to replace Peterson, because that'd be someone they can give the keys to the entire organization to.
After Peterson, who's the next hottest? Like Bernie, like they might get fired any week. I'm having a hard time picking it out because it seems like everyone else might be fired at the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think most guys are getting fired at the end of the year. I would say keep an eye on maybe Dennis Allen in New Orleans. They started out real hot. Now they've dropped four in a row.
Dude, what happened? That offense disappeared. It was the greatest show on earth for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'd agree with Aaron on Dennis Allen. Like, because the one thing, because Dennis Allen was defensive coordinator, right, before?
Yes. And he took over when Peyton basically walked away.
Generally, like, the head coach with a specific side of the ball specialty, like, the one thing you could trust on him is, like, hey, they're at least going to get their side of the ball right. You look at, you know, McVay with the offense in the Rams. You look at a defensive coach like even Eberflus with the Bears, as many questions there have. Like, the defense has, like, been top five in the league the last, like, 16 games for the Bears. How bad the defense in New Orleans looks is very questionable for what generally your specialty from a head coach is.
Yeah, I mean, they gave him up 51 points. I'm also looking at the list. I think Kevin Stefanski for the Browns, I don't think he wants to be there. I mean, the Browns is just a mess. Like you said, Rome, basically they're trying to hype up Deshaun Watson like he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Oh, it sounds like they're chopping off his balls, dude. He has no other choice but to say, like, he has the best option to win the game.
Yeah,
like,
so, nah. I mean, I think he's a really good coach. I think he's going to come available at the end of the year regardless, but the Browns may just move on. They got their DC, was an ex-head coach in the league with the Lions, so that's an easy transition. They want to make that move just to try to give the organization a spark. So those two names would probably be on the top of my list of guys that could get fired in season outside of, you know, Doug Peterson.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Stefanski, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, but, like, you look at Deshaun Watson's contract, $45 million this year guaranteed, $45 million next year guaranteed, $45 million the year after that guaranteed, with a cap hit of $72.9 million in those final 2 years. So, like, well, you can all talk all you want about, like, wanting to move on from this guy. You literally can't. You have handcuffed the organization where this guy is on your roster because he's too expensive to cut. Because he'd be accounting for a third of your money, what it would be, and you wouldn't be able to sign anybody else to replace him. So you can't not have him as the starter at this point.
It's cancer,
I think if you're the Browns, you're glad this new allegation came forward. And I wonder if you're out there scouting people to come forward with new allegations just to get this guy on the exempt list to get him out of the lineup. That might be the Browns' best move, honestly.
I think he already settled, didn't he?
Well, he's got a new one that the league's still investigating that just popped up like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I could have sworn I read something that he settled. Crazy. Yeah, for me, I'm keeping an eye on Zach Taylor. I think that's low-key might be, like, pretty hot just because the way the Bengals have. They're not really, dude, 2-4. I know they've been some close losses in there, but they look like shit outside of Burrow. So any other thoughts on that?
What's your top five? What's Rome's top five, man?
I'm pulling up the top five right now.
I heard a brief list earlier from you, and it was shocking. So I just wanted to see if you revamped it or if you stuck with your top five.
Yeah. So
last time he had Eberflus on this list, so I went in the episode you were off. So I don't know.
Eberflus,
huh?
Or for hot coaches, or not hot coaches, hot seat.
Hot coaches. that's a different list, man.
God damn it. Today's not my day,
We're going to go into hot teams. I mean, I know Eberflus has got to be off the list. Not right now. Right now that seat's feeling pretty cushioned.
Yeah, no, it's cooled off a lot.
He flew first class out of London back into Chicago. Let's put it that
Granted,
way.
Okay, so like Chicago, I know, Jason, you're really happy, but they've also played against like the bottom seller of like a lot of bad defenses. But granted, that's what you want a team to do anyway. So congrats.
It's funny you say that, and I'm just going to be total biased homer here. Well, I'm not going to say I got stats on this, but like, I like Jaden Daniels as well, too. And I don't love the, you know, Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams thing. I like it as, hey, if this is going to be the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady rivalry in the NFC, you know, we're already flexing this game up in 2 weeks into the afternoon, you know, in the afternoon game on CBS or Fox, whichever one it's on. So like they could turn this into something, but you look at the teams that Jaden Daniels played to, no one's really talking about, oh, we're going to play a bad Giants team, a 1-4 Cincinnati team, a 1-4 Arizona team, a Cleveland team that's like 1-4, 2-3, whatever they are too. So like, Jaden Daniels was playing against pretty bad defenses and bad teams too. That you know,
Giants are a good defense, though.
Okay, but he was scored 21 points up against him, so it wasn't like he wiped
not a touchdown. He didn't even get a touchdown against those guys. Seven field goals.
So, like overall, Caleb, you know, just saying, Caleb had four touchdowns in this one game against the Jags. Jaden's got four touchdowns, I think, total for the year so far. So it'll be interesting. I'm saying.
You play against who you play. Both teams are playing well. They got winning records. I mean, Rome's one to talk. The Steelers haven't beat anybody of any substance. They lost to the Cowboys, so I don't think he has much room to be talking over there.
They should have won that game, but yeah.
I mean, his team's 4-2, and they're going to bench their starter just because, you know, we got to put Russell in or something like that. I don't know what's going on over there.
Allegedly. I don't want to talk about that right now.
What's your top five teams, Rome? Give it to me, man.
Top five.
Top five teams or top five coaches in the hot seat?
No,
top five teams.
Okay.
Yeah, this is post week six rankings. Last week I had Vikings number one, Chiefs two, with Texans, Lions, and Commanders. A little bit of shakeup this week. Typically teams don't like drop down in most people's power rankings, but they did in my fucking rankings with the bye week. So we'll go from five up. Number five is dropping from number two to number five, the Kansas City Chiefs. I got to give them respect. They're a decent team. They're 5-0, but they really haven't played well. They should be 1-4, but I'll give respect where it's due. The fact that they're able to win and with the leftover guys that they have, you know, even if they get somewhat warm, it gives me a little concern, especially, you know, they're already halfway to like their projected win total. So five, Chiefs. Coming at number four, they also dropped the rankings from number one, is the Minnesota Vikings. They're on a bye week, still respect what they've done, but yeah, we'll just see how they do. I think they have a pretty well-run offense, really good defense. I'm a big Flores fan, so showing some love there at number four. Any feedback so far, guys?
No, man. Just keep going.
Number three. Who was an honorable mention last week, especially from Aaron, but the Baltimore Ravens do make the cut this week at number three. They had a hell of a game this week. Derrick Henry, man, just seeing him on the Ravens, great running attack. As we talked about, that their defense isn't as good, and that's why I kind of penalized them. They've also played some of the top offenses so far in the first 6 weeks of the season, so I'm also not going to ding them for that. I don't know if I'm creating some bias one way or the other, but showing some love to the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson crew over there. Number two, they go up one spot, is the Houston Texans. they might have the best running back combo in the NFL. And I loved watching their game. Stroud's a stud. That's all I got to say. And the new number one on my power rankings is the Detroit Lions. Smacking up the Cowboys. Finally looking like the Super Bowl contender that I thought they might look like. Only downside, Hutchinson. Did they lose the Super Bowl with that loss? I don't know. I hope they can, you know, shore that. But they're studs flat in and flat out. I expect them to go on a tear right now and possibly get to like 13. They look like a 13 or 14 win team. So we'll see how it goes. But Lions are the new number one on this week's Power Five.
No feedback. I'm good on you this week, Rum.
All right. I really want to do top eight, but Aaron said that was too much.
Keep it top five, man. It's just more interesting.
Goddamn, so tough, dude. You got like the Packers lurking around the corner. Got a few teams lurking around the corner. Should we do a bottom?
Bottom five?
Yeah, I would like to do a bottom five.
I mean, you do enough lists. I think there was, I forgot what, I don't want to bring Formula One into this, but there was some magazine article someone put out, like the 15 hottest Formula One drivers. There's only 20 Formula One drivers. So we did a list of 15 out of 20. Who are the five that weren't on the list, you know? Like,
yeah.
So, Rome, you do like a top, you know, 25 NFL team. We're just leaving seven teams out, you know?
Well, I thought like eight, you know, it's like the quarter of the league. It's kind of nice. Everyone does like a top 10. It's like, dude, that's like a third of the league. Is it really?
Hey, I don't know. Don't let Aaron like dictate your segment, Rome. If you want to do top eight, you do top eight.
All right.
Keep
well,
it top
that's...
five, man. Keep it top five. It just seems so interesting. It's just much more interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's a power top five. Anything else about the NFL?
Not for this week. I think, you know, we'll be back here in a few days, go over lines for the next week coming up.
Cool. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about college football and some baseball. We're back after a quick little break. Jason's eating chocolate, trying to reenact my chip segment from a few weeks ago. We'll post that on socials. Pretty funny. But college football, pretty wild, man. The Oregon-Ohio State game was crazy. Colorado-Kansas State was crazy. The Penn State and USC game was crazy, going down the wire. What else? I feel like I'm missing like some upsets. It's just so much football.
I mean, there were a lot of good games. I mean, Big Ten probably stole the show, like you mentioned, Rome, Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, USC. You're just about to get to Alabama escaping against South Carolina.
They should have lost that game.
Two-point conversion failed by South Carolina. Had them wide open. The pass just sailed on them. Then recovered the onside kick. Can't get in the field goal range. And then Florida against Tennessee. Tennessee again on the ropes. You got two programs, Tennessee and Alabama, both on the ropes, and they play this weekend coming up. So it's a big weekend in college football for sure.
Yeah, so with that Alabama game, no way he's winning the Heisman. He has to be out of the running right now, right?
No, I mean, I think running back out of Boise State is far and away Heisman frontrunner now. Yeah.
And then, I'm kind of rooting for him.
I mean, at this point, there's no reason why Boise State doesn't win out, too. And then, you know, he wins the Heisman, and their only loss is to Oregon, right? And
so yeah, that's 1 point, 2 points they lost to Oregon? I think it was 39-38 or something like that. Yeah.
37-34. But okay. Yeah. So, I mean, they play. I mean, you can look at their strength of schedule all you want because they're playing.
UNLV is their only next big game. Outside of that, like you said, Jason, they should run the table.
Yeah, and then, you know, a win against Oregon or a loss against Oregon by 3 points at Oregon, too, like, you know, that's a great, great loss, and they're far and away, you know, going to be inside the playoff at this point. And Heisman Trophy winner for Ashton.
He's their front runner. And you got to remember that game, Oregon had a kick return and a punt return for a touchdown. So, yeah. If you know, Boise State had sharpened up the special teams, you could have been looking at an upset there by Boise State, and probably they'd be a top 10 ranked team. But, yeah, I think of the non Power Four, Group of Five teams. Boise State right now, they're the team everybody's looking up at.
Colorado also had a chance to make some noise, came up a little short. Kansas State escapes. I think Colorado actually might be a decent team, right? Maybe.
I mean, they got a lot of singular great talent on the team. I think that'll probably be a matchup dependent, you know, game every week for them on kind of where their top end, you know, skill guys are kind of lining up against the opponent at this point. So, I mean, there's no shortage of talent for Deion. The question is, can you build a cohesive, you know, top to bottom roster in college football with, you know, the 24 guys you need and then some depth behind that just through the transfer portal and overhauling the roster every year, I think is the question. Do you build a cohesive team out of that? And I don't know. I think it's still out for the jury. They got the talent, but it's still the Big 12. I think there's a lot of sneaky good teams in there. It's going to be, you know, a lot harder for Colorado down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, the Big 12 is like the old Pac-12. Like, anybody can knock off anybody on Saturday. Like Jason said, Colorado has a ton of individual talent. I mean, Shedeur Sanders, you know, Travis Hunter, these two guys could go in the top five, and yet the program could finish below 500 as the season goes on. You know, can they continue the recruiting? They're not really recruiting. They're just bringing in 50, 60, 70 new transfers every year. I think 90 new transfers they brought in year one under Deion. Their defense, they have no depth. They can't stop anybody from running the ball. They play man-to-man on defense, which is great when you got a guy like Travis Hunter. He's a shutdown guy, but everybody else on your team can't cover me. So Colorado, I think the jury's still out. I think Big 12 got really fortunate. Cam Rising, Utah, Jason's guy's out.
Dude,
for
out.
The season. Utah suffered another loss in the Big 12.
Cam's coming back for year nine is what I'm hearing.
My sources tell me there's a big-time chance that he will.
Amazing, you know, man.
So whether or not that's in Salt Lake or if he decides to, you know, hey, maybe Deion's going to need a quarterback next year, so keep an eye on that.
I think Deion's gone next year, but that's just me.
I think he'll stay around one more year, Deion.
Okay. Yeah, his son's going to probably stick around, right?
No, he's going.
No, he has two kids on the team.
I think the other one's a senior.
He is?
Yeah, I think he's a senior.
Yeah, the one that just came back from surgery?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. Yeah, he's probably gone.
I think one thing this weekend, too, I want to kind of go back to the Big Ten you were talking through. So first year of, you know, this expanded Big Ten, you got the four major West Coast teams part of that. Saw some interesting stats on Twitter this weekend just around Big Ten teams traveling at least two time zones for conference games are 3-10. So, you know, this is the only conference that's really spanning all four, you know, major U.S. time zones is kind of going through. The only wins were Indiana beating UCLA, Minnesota beating UCLA, and then Penn State coming back on USC. So, you know, these teams going west or east to west right now, you know, capped off by that Oregon or Ohio State loss at Oregon, like, it'll be very intriguing on how, you know, this really nationwide conference does in college with them, you know, the amount of travel involved. And this is just football. You know, I know we're probably not going to break into a ton of the other sports too, but I can't imagine like men's water polo that's got to go from UCLA out to Rutgers or whatever the heck kind of travel these teams are going to have to do for these other sports too. But just I think some very interesting stuff and, you know, what's going to be potential upsets that are like, not great for the Big Ten's overall standing getting playoff teams because you could have a Midwest team travel two time zones and lose and knock themselves out of the playoff.
Yeah, I read an article over the weekend. Can't remember what school it was, but someone hired some NASA scientist or Caltech people to try to find out a better efficiency for the traveling for all those sports teams because now they're going to be having issues. And now I guess they're starting to realize that this is kind of expensive. That they're trying to figure out whether it's going to be profitable at the end of the day. So there might be conversations about restructuring the conferences again, where it's more travel friendly for these things. Like as if no one fucking saw it coming.
Oh, it's profitable in football, but like
football, it is. But
like Jason mentioned, water polo, volleyball, sports like that. Yeah, they're going to suffer. I mean, I even heard Penn State doesn't even have a runway long enough for them to fly their whole program to USC. They got to go to Harrisburg. drive 80 miles on a bus and then fly over. So, you know, James Franklin's trying to get a new runway paved over there a little bit longer so they can get a full staff and plane on in just one trip.
Well, yeah, football has to be so profitable, though, to pay for all this. And that's the thing. Like, is it?
Oh, it's profitable, man. Football is.
No, but football pays for everything else. Like, overall, is it going to be profitable? That's the question now, because it has to pay for all these other schools to do the same fucking thing.
I think it'll be intriguing on how, you know, how big, you know, how big will the profits be for the college football playoff and how does that continue to grow? And then the other thing is, I don't think we're done with conference expansion at the same time, too, because everyone in the ACC is unhappy with their television deal. And, you know, is the ultimate goal for the Big Ten, do they get to 20 teams that they're at? Are they at 16 now? You know,
what's 18, I think the Big Ten's got 18 teams, right?
18 teams? Okay. I mean, what's stopping them to go to 20 teams? Do they add two more West Coast teams at a certain point? And then maybe, you know, you're dividing this thing up like, you know, East and West at that point, and you just have two 10-team conferences, like, with they're within a time zone of each other, like, as you get into the long term. I think, you know, geographically, I think the things will work out, but I don't know. Like, the hot names, I think, always for the Big Ten are Miami and Notre Dame, so I don't know if it makes it any better because they basically would have a school in all four corners of the country at that point.
Yeah, there's also a conversation how the Pac-12 is trying to make a comeback. The Mountain West just finally got their 12th full-time school with Hawaii committing, so they're going to be a conference to stay around. But I think is it the Big Ten or the Big 12? One of them, the Pac-12 is like their nemesis, and their goal is to completely just eat everybody up out of that conference within 5 years. I believe I read, like, by 2030, they don't want the conference around anymore.
That'd be the Big 12. They definitely have it out for the Pac-12.
So it was the Big 12. Yeah, I read a really good article on it, and I was like, oh, shit, they're not fucking joking. So,
well, if you remember, at a certain point, the Pac-12 was going to be the one devouring the Big 12 because they were rumored to get Texas, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech or Texas A&M or something. I don't know. There was four
of those.
I think
it was A&M, and then A&M went to the SEC, and then something happened. Oklahoma, Texas, the Pac-12 got cold feet and didn't want to pay the buyout at the time or something.
Yeah, but then that was the big thing, is they were going to decimate the Big 12 at the time and make that kind of the first super conference, which is kind of a huge missed opportunity of what we're considering that conference is now. So, I mean, the Pac-12 at this point is two teams, and then they're just merging a bunch of Mountain West teams into the Pac-12. So this is just, you know, it's got the name Pac-12, but it's the Mountain West Conference still at this point, just adding, you know, two pretty remote, you know, universities in Oregon State and Washington State. I mean, Oregon State's in a beautiful place, but Corvallis, Oregon is in the middle of nowhere. So
is Pullman, Washington. They're both in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not exactly like the big stuff you're going to get. If they're in a revamped Pac-12, that's basically a Mountain West, a kind of an upgrade, okay, what it is. But I think at a certain point, the ACC is going to be targeted when that contract's done. I know it's still got some time on it, but Florida State wants to get out. Miami probably wants to get out at a certain point. So, you know, who is the SEC going to target if they're going to expand beyond their 16 teams? You know, are they, you know, because Florida State's, I think, interested in SEC ties. So, I mean, there's a lot that is still going to go there that will eventually change, you know, maybe what the travel is around these conferences, where you're just going to have three major football powers and then subdivisions of them for the travel benefits.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Real quick, Aaron, all your games to watch were pretty fun. I think I caught like a little bit of a good half of them, I think. UCLA almost pulled out the upset. That was really fun to watch, surprisingly. Jason, you should have watched it. I know you said it was going to be a bad game,
UCLA,
but it was actually really good.
UCLA should have won that game. I don't know what Deshaun Foster wasn't going for it there on fourth and like half a yard, man. Why are you going to punt? That's what cost them the game. You're 1-4. Just fucking go for it.
I thought they got the first down. I don't know if they have challenges.
He was short. He was short. I saw it. Yeah, he was short. I was watching it at the time.
Yeah, LSU, Mississippi.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that game. That was a big win for LSU.
Yeah.
In overtime.
I like Ole Miss. They should have won that game. They got lucky. LSU got lucky to escape that. It was a fun game.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think Ole Miss showed a lot You know, we talked a lot about them losing to Kentucky. They didn't look good. They bounced back and blew out South Carolina the week before. Rome, I agree. They outplayed LSU, just a few mistakes here and there.
Costly mistakes, though.
They let LSU hang around, and LSU late drive, late in the game to tie it up with a touchdown and then win in overtime of a touchdown. But it was a good game.
At this point, though, Ole Miss is going to have to win out to be considered for the playoff. And
oh, they're out. I think that's it.
Well, I mean, they have to win out. That's where it's at. I mean, Oklahoma they got this week. I know they're unranked, but it's still Oklahoma. And then they got Georgia. That'll be the biggest game that they have to win. And then Florida, while not great, still a competitive game. And then a rivalry game against Mississippi State at the end of the year. So, good team. But, yeah, I think the Kentucky loss was
– they couldn't afford that. Yeah.
They couldn't afford that one. And then LSU, I mean, LSU continues to get talent. I'm not the Brian Kelly believer. I think he did some good things at the beginning of Notre Dame and then was just almost got fired by Notre Dame and somehow turned it around and then parlayed it into this job. But I think he held Notre Dame back to a certain degree. And, you know, LSU, a lot of fans are not, I think, over the moon for his performance. But you think how bad the end of his predecessor's tenure was there. They were, I think, a below 500 team. So they are better under Brian Kelly from getting talent, but I think still a tier below in the SEC the past couple of years.
LSU, man, they're kind of like one of those programs, like if they go 10-2, they consider it a bad year. They believe too much in what they got going on. Ed Orgeron, like Jason mentioned, had that program in the dumps, below 500. Brian Kelly's a great recruiter, a lot of talent at LSU. He won at Cincinnati, was the only guy to win there before they came back up. He did a great job at Notre Dame. Notre Dame was a mess.
He brought it back, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, now LSU, he's got them top 10, top 15. They don't look pretty sometimes, LSU. They lose games they shouldn't, but won primetime games. He beat Alabama back when Alabama was their prime team, number one ranked, with Bryce Young. Now this game, victory over Ole Miss. I don't buy LSU being a real playoff. They may make the playoff, but I don't consider them a national championship threat.
Yeah,
their defense is still a mess.
Yeah, Kelly, ever since I heard that fake Southern accent when he got down there, I don't know what to think of him anymore, but I did like him at Notre Dame and everywhere else.
Hey, man, he was just pandering to the audience, you know? Pandering. You know, just, hey, I'm just down there. I'm trying to be a part of the team. Let me give you a little Southern accent with it.
That's what they do in the South, man. You got to ponder to the audience.
Okay. I'm trying to see any other games that kind of stuck out in my head. Arizona BYU.
Notre Dame 49-7 victory
over
Stanford.
You did call it. Yeah, you did. I saw 2 minutes. Once I saw the score, I'm like, all right, I'm done. I'm not going back to this one.
That's why that game didn't make the game to keep an eye on. It wasn't worth it.
It makes a lot of sense.
I'm actually very intrigued with Notre Dame. I know no one wants to talk about but them, but they do their two hardest games of the year potentially are gonna be Army and Navy.
They're both ranked now.
They're both ranked, and Notre Dame plays both of them this year. Very interesting down the stretch what that'll be, because
are they at SC or does SC come to Notre Dame?
They are at SC. That'll generally be what the thing. I mean, the playoff could be on the line at that point, but generally
Army's for real, man. Army is for real.
Yeah, so Notre Dame's schedule to me isn't as easy as people probably saw at the beginning of the year, where they got Georgia Tech coming up, probably not that hard of a game, but then they got Navy. They're gonna have Florida State, which generally you think is a hard game, probably not that bad this year. Virginia, but then Army and USC to end the year. So the Army Navy game, I know as everyone's looking at, because there's a chance Army and Navy play for the conference championship for the American. These are the AAC, the Eric Athletic Conference.
AAC.
And they could play the conference championship game, and then a week later play the Army Navy game just for the heck of it, for the tradition of the Army Navy game. So and then both of them or one of them could potentially be in the playoff or knock the other out of the potential playoff based on, you know, the stakes of that game too, which is just extremely interesting because you haven't got the service teams, I think, within like the grasp of a national championship in a half a century.
I think what's interesting about Army Navy is they're not running like the T-bone triple option and all that. They're literally throwing the football up and down the field. And I think this was kind of surprising people. Like they put on the film, they go, this isn't Army, this isn't Navy. You know, this looks like, Tulsa or Toledo or somebody out there throwing it all over the field. I mean, Army, Navy, man. Give them credit.
No one checking the
undefeated and ranked.
no one checking the NIL money coming from like our tax dollars or something like that. This is where the
the biggest pool of NIL money is right there for sure.
It's like, hey, if we're going to prop up any college football programs with a bunch of NIL money, let's just be our tax dollars. We'll pay that.
That's why I don't know why Hawaii is not any good. I mean, there's so many billionaires on that island. Why didn't somebody want to just buy a football team and be like the billionaires of Hawaii and just have a good football squad? That's what I would be doing.
Yeah, I'm 100%. I mean, I think these guys are going to go to the other islands at this point. But yeah, how Hawaii doesn't have like a state-of-the-art facility and just recruit and just people to come hang out in Hawaii for 4 years is kind of baffling.
They're pretty terrible. Also, Vanderbilt had a good win against Kentucky.
I love Vanderbilt, man. Loving that. Good. I hope they keep the story going.
And then Texas just demolished Oklahoma, man. They look like a legit number one top dog contender for me.
Georgia this weekend, big game.
This would be good. Who you guys got? We'll save it, I guess.
Yeah,
we got that on Thursday.
Still breaking down film on the games.
Still breaking down film. Yeah, man, it's going to be a lot of fun. All right, cool. I think that's it. Let's take a quick break, come back, talk some baseball.
Let's do it.
Talk some baseball. All right, time for a little baseball talk. Lots of games have happened. We got out of the DS. Now we're in the CS. Cleveland Indians. I mean, Guardians. I don't know why they changed it. I really like the Indian mascot. But they're going up against the Yankees. I was at the bar at Aces, a New York bar, especially a Yankee bar. Lots of fun. Yankees fans, they're pretty fucking interesting. They're so ready to jump on Aaron Judge is nuts. Like, every time he, like, has contact with the ball, they think it's a home run. But he finally got one today. He got a second RBI and then finally a home run in today's game, too. Looks like they're leading pretty comfortably. Let's start with that, I guess. Unless you guys have some comments of how the ALDS ended with either series, KC against the Yankees or Guardians against the Tigers, which was pretty fun.
I think you had on Saturday, Lane Thomas with that grand slam there carried Cleveland over the top, over the Tigers. And then, you know, Yankees obviously won in four games. And now, like you mentioned, roll up 2-0 Aaron Judge with his first home run of this postseason. Aces going wild. I think I heard him, you know, jumping up and down once you came live on the air, once that game went final.
Oh, yeah. Tigers, right? Screwball. He gave up the grand slam. I found my notes. It was like a fastball down the middle. Thomas hit that at the bottom of the fifth. And they asked, like,
Thomas came over from the Nationals, right? National League? Washington Nationals? Yeah, I remember him in the Fantasy Baseball League. He was doing pretty good for some people.
Yeah, Screwball, pretty.
Not me.
Not you.
I was glad he was gone. It allowed me to catch some ground up in the stolen base category. He was hurting me there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but I mean, a well-earned victory versus the Guardians, because it was like Aaron mentioned it, I think, in our preview ahead of that game, going against the best pitcher of baseball this year with Skubal. And, you know, to be able to, you know, put up seven in that game when you're facing the guy who's been shut down all year, that's a definitely a deserving spot for the Guardians. And, you know, we talked about it was more nationally biased, but probably these teams that got the buys that have kind of collapsed in the division series with this new playoff format. But going chalk with the 1-2 seeds of the Yankees and Guardians in the American League, and what were pretty much the two best teams down the stretch for the most part. It was a lot of parity, I think, within the American League, with a bunch of teams having a lot of kind of streakiness throughout the year. And the Yankees, particularly when they were going through their struggles, there was a lot of, you know, strife in the New York media of them blowing the AL East lead. But I think these are the two best teams in the American League. The Guardians definitely with one of the best bullpens, you know, of this decade, maybe, and probably one of the best closer seasons with what Class A did of all time, you know, rivaling, you know, like Mariano Rivera. So down now 0-2 in the ALCS, it'll be tough for the Guardians to make the comeback as it head back to Cleveland with the Yankees, you know, with this lead. But pretty good series so far, even though, you know, the Yankees are up 2-0.
Yeah, I think the issue with the Guardians, Jason mentioned, the bullpen is great. They were one of the best teams in the American League all year, but can they score runs? I think they're averaging 3.5 runs per game this postseason against a lineup that's as potent as the Yankees. And the Yankees got a good bullpen and pitching themselves. That's not going to get it done. They've got to score some runs, got to get an early lead, jump on the Yankees, put some pressure on them. They're unable to do that going forward, especially game three, game four. Could be a quick series.
That game was pretty interesting. Yankees left like a lot of guys on base in the first several innings, and Judge, until yesterday's RBI and then today finally breaking through, he's been pretty cold this playoff. What's his name? Cantillo of Cleveland. He just had like some wild pitches, like four wild pitches that one inning, and that's how the Yankees got some guys on base and it kind of blew that game open a little bit.
Yeah, all the highlights of this has pretty much been Judd's home run, but Aaron's highlighting. But I think Aaron highlighting the Guardians' inability to hit. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I watch too many Guardians games against the White Sox. I feel like Jose Ramirez hits three home runs in every.
He did homer today.
He did. I think I literally turned after I turned flipped away from the game and turned it back on. He homered, but opportunity. I think this is a team that they're athletic from the Guardians standpoint. They manufacture runs, then have a few big power backs that, you know, like Ramirez, that can, you know, get the ball deep. But when you got the depth of power that the Yankees have, and if it gets going at all, and they, you know, they got some, you know, 1B starters with Rodon and a few others on the Yankees that would be able to, you know, be quality starters, I think jumping out to early leads for the Yankees to avoid the Cleveland bullpen, you know, is how they're going to close the series out to get to the World Series.
Nice. Let's talk the other league, I guess. So, I was really excited watching the Dodgers play. It had no expectations because it was a bullpen game. We did talk about this on the last podcast, right? I feel like we did. Where it was one of Robert's best called games, I think, ever. And now
the game four, we talked about
okay,
that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah,
and then game five, man.
Pitcher's duel, really. I mean, Darvish was really good for the Padres.
Until the seventh inning?
He gave a home run, what, in the second, and then a solo shot there in the seventh to Teoscar Hernandez, who we talked about being, I thought he was the biggest offseason signing the Dodgers had all.
Big, dude. I'm a big fan of his.
He's clutch. You know, he's not afraid of the moment. He comes up. He gets big hits. He's been doing it all season. That's something the Dodgers haven't really had. Ohtani's, with nobody on base, is 0 for his last 19 and then hitting 6 or 8 with runners on. There was talks about maybe moving him down the lineup. Roberts put a shutdown to that, so he will bat lead off game three.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I mean, the Dodgers tied, I believe, a record for postseason play with 33 straight scoreless innings between starters and bullpen. That in itself is remarkable given how hot the Padres' bats were going in, and, you know, the Mets shut out game one, and then game two, right off the bat, jumped off to that 6-0 lead and, you know, rode their Manaea in the bullpen to a victory.
Yeah, really good rebound game from the Mets. What made that little run, as you mentioned, Aaron, about the pitching, is because the Dodgers have been struggling with pitching for years. It's their Achilles heel. It's been their Achilles heel for like a decade now. Every time they get to the postseason, they have nobody left. Everyone's burnt out. So really impressive. Kiki Hernandez coming in clutch. Seems like he's just one of those guys that gets really hot, gets up just like Soto on the Yankees. But we'll see how it goes, though. Aaron, I'm assuming you're going. I'm assuming both of you guys are going for the Mets. I don't know.
I mean, I want the Mets to win. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
I had the Dodgers in six when the series started. I'll stick with Dodgers in six, but I definitely rooting for the Mets
for sure.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm with Aaron. It was Dodgers in six, but I'm definitely rooting against you. Just for your suffering. I mean, Aaron and I were saying it long ago. We've repeated in the podcast, like going into the playoffs, it was really we thought it was going to be a Phillies, Dodgers, NLCS, you know, against the Yankees in the World Series, and those kind of being the three teams that were the class of the league. Obviously, the Phillies we were wrong about, and the Mets are here in this spot, but the Dodgers still to have the talent that should be taking them to the World Series. I think if you're a conspiracy theorist, I think that Major League Baseball will take anyone from the National League versus the Yankees. The Guardians are the only odd man out. But a Dodgers-Yankees World Series, I think, would do numbers. But I mean, obviously, a Mets-Yankees World Series would do numbers too. So, but I think the Dodgers have just, you know, they've been long overdue to have one of these, you know, World Series runs within, you know, a regular 162 game season. I know everyone's going to throw them for the COVID year. It was a legit year. But I think it was a very different postseason and stuff. But this has been a team that's been great for a long time. Like, it's the envy of majority of baseball fans for how the organization is ran, because yes, they spend a lot of money, but they're also one of the best, you know, farm system organizations in the league, because they're able to trade, you know, anyone and everyone, because they have a wealth of prospects and they let dudes walk left and right that are top tier guys, and they're always going to have a backup kind of behind it. So yeah, I think just you're expecting more from the Dodgers, because, you know, compared to Aaron's Atlanta Braves through our entire childhood of the 90s, you know, they were the class of baseball, but they only delivered, you know, the 95 World Series and that was it. And, you know, the Dodgers need to make another kind of run here during this era and put a World Series together, because they should. They've been the best team in baseball for a decade now.
Yeah, like you said, Jason, I mean, the Dodgers, they got to do it. They've had disappointing losses against, you know, the Astros, the Red Sox. No, I mean, in that span, we've seen the Nationals, the Braves win World Series from the National League. The D-backs, who kind of came out of nowhere, have been into a World Series. The Rangers, who have been irrelevant for the last decade, have won a World Series during that span. So it's time for the Dodgers. They spent the money. They got the players. Can they get to the finish line? I mean, the Mets, they're scrappy. We didn't expect them to be here. You know, they were 10 games back of the Braves. You know, they've mentioned back in early June. Caught them, surpassed them. It just seems like when the moment gets tough and you think the Mets are going to fold, they've stepped up. Thought the Padres were ready to take that leap. They weren't. So we'll see. I mean, if the Dodgers get it done.
I just think, like, this iteration of the Dodgers, like, as Kiki said at the end of that game five win, they just don't give a fuck. And I feel like I kind of heard those rumors. We caught a Dodger game earlier this year, all three of us. You know, we saw Hernandez hit a home run. So Hell hit a home run that same game was really fun. But this one kind of feels a little different. Like, they seem like mentally tougher, which I think maybe that has also been like a lacking part for the Dodgers. So I'm excited. I don't want to jinx it. I'm just really happy just to see my team competitive. So I'm just going to go with that. But
team's been competitive for the last 10, 12 years, like Jason said.
You know what I meant, man. You know what I fucking meant. All right. I'm just happy we're past the first round again.
I think, like you said, Rome, I think for the Dodgers not giving a fuck is like, hey, we know we've choked.
Yeah,
we're owning it now, and now we're ready to take that next step. Let's see if they can finish it.
I feel like that's what it is. Yeah,
the telling signs have been when you got like Mookie did not start out on the greatest parts of the postseason, but then hey, got it going. Got some key hits. You know, one or two home runs he had. You know, in kind of those stretches. So like, they've been able to get it going and not have like, hey, it's a 1-for-34 performance or whatever in the playoffs. I mean, for the Yankee side, you're looking at that. Now Judge gets a home run and has like a big moment, and some of these things in the postseason just, you know, kind of compound. You know, it's like postseason hitting is hard. Like, these are generally tight games and where things are at. But once you start putting a moment or two together and the momentum goes, like, a lot of things change, you know, in a short, you know, games, you know, best of seven series.
Yeah, one thing I heard about Roberts, he's like, everyone who's been not doing so well, so even Muncie, Freeman, everyone's been getting hits. He's just telling them, like, just relax, dude. Just go out and hit. Don't need overthink about it. And it seems like they responded. They had a pretty good, valiant effort. I think it was, like, in the fifth or sixth inning to try to come back. Bases were loaded. Mets did a great job on getting out of that pinch. But should be a fun series nonetheless. I hope Judge does well. Just not against my Dodgers, or if we make it that far, but we'll see. If the Dodgers don't make it, I'm going for the Yankees all the way.
You might be the only person, man. I mean, you know, the Yankees fans are probably the same Cowboys fans we were talking about earlier in the podcast. So I think if the Yankees are making it, you're going to have, you know, 49 and a half states rooting against the Yankees in the World Series.
True that, man. True that. I mean, I can't stand the Yankees for all the heartbreak they've given me over the years. As you can see, nothing left on top from all the Yankees losses by the Braves against those guys. But, you know, I can't stand Rome's Dodgers. So if they do get there, I'll be rooting for the Yankees to beat the Dodgers. Anybody but the Dodgers, and I'm happy.
You're fucking crazy, dude. All right. I think that's it, unless you want to talk. Yeah, that's it. I'm not going to talk about WNBA basketball.
No, they haven't played another game since, basically, so we're good.
They did. Game two, Liberty came back.
We'll cover that on Thursday.
I got through the win. I don't know. Whoever wins game three wins the series.
Liberty are going to win it.
Yeah. Well, the fact that they've been up like 15 points plus on both games, they just fucking dominated. They just did a choke job in game one, and they'll do it. Thanks, guys.